Hello and welcome to Dunktown, the podcast where we learn about basketball one game at a time. I'm Anastasia.
And I'm Agata.
And today we have an extra special returning guest, host of many podcasts, including We Got This with Mark and Hal, Tights and Fights, and Good Morning Night Vale. It's Hal Lublin.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Welcome back.
Oh, it's our pleasure. The last time you were on, you were the last in-person guest before lockdown.
Yeah,
that's right. Oh my goodness,
and you were so full of hope.
I'm nervous but hopeful, and
you were, you know, talking about your trip, your upcoming trip to Philly.
Oh my goodness! Here's a fun story about that, which is I was still going to go up to the day before.
Wow!
Because I thought I'm sure it'll be fine. I'd just been at a convention where I touched nobody's hand for 3 days and constantly was sanitizing. But I was like, oh, well, I really want to go to the game. I'm sure it'll be okay. And then the entire season was canceled. And I immediately was like, can I not come home 2 times in the next 3 weeks to watch a basketball team that's not going to play?
Oh my God.
Oh. Yeah, and that was just the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember as you were leaving, I hugged you and I was like, did I maybe just kill Hal?
This is my ghost.
Can you confirm or deny it? Did her hug kill you?
I did pass away on the way to the car. I just dropped, but my spirit continued on and was able to drive my car home, which was a miracle.
Amazing. That's what we'd love to hear.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, the podcasting nook has changed so much, but you're one of the last people to ever see it.
Yeah. We'll be doing this from now on.
Yeah. When they do a documentary about Dunktown, you know, like 20 years from now, they'll interview you and be like, what was it like?
The 50 for 50.
Yeah, exactly. That's the podcast documentary series.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that.
Have you been back to Philly since?
I went back that brief window where we were fully vaccinated and Delta hadn't hit yet. Mm-hmm. We're like, yeah, summertime. We can travel. We visited my wife's family and my family in the East Coast, and had the Sixers made it to the conference finals, I would have maybe gone to a game.
Oh,
wow.
But I'm kind of glad. I mean, I'm devastated that they lost. That was heartbreaking, but I'm glad I didn't get into that giant crowd of people, because I probably would have been sweaty palms the whole time.
Yeah. Have you been? You haven't been to a basketball game? No,
the last one was January of 2020.
Yeah.
Wild. Yeah, we went a couple times to Clippers games, but now it's like, I don't know. Now I'm back to being like, I don't want to be around. I don't want to be near that many people.
We went to one of the Western Conference Finals Clippers games, and that was great. And I'm glad we went. But yeah, right now, especially because everything is like really flaring up with Omicron and everything. So it's like, I don't think I'm.
And the league is like canceling games everywhere because players are out. Like, because about to go to a Bulls game.
Yeah, I was in Chicago recently and I was so excited. I just got my booster. I'm like, everything's great. Went to Chicago. Got tickets to a Bulls game. They're like pretty good seats. And they postponed that game. It was on December 14th. And they are not going to give me my money back.
Oh, what?
I have called them 3 times being like, what is happening? And they're like, well, we're not sure what's happening yet. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? Like, what do you mean you're not sure?
Did you buy it from NBA?
I mean, I bought it from Ticketmaster, but you have to contact the Bulls. Like,
yeah, they have to give you your money back.
Well, they said we're the game's postponed. It's not canceled. So you'll have tickets to a game. I'm like, I don't fucking live in Chicago. I'm not going to fly back. But I think what they want, but they're not going to say it, is they want me to just sell the tickets.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to do that. Like, I want my money back. So I'm just going to be a real squeaky wheel about it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on the fine print, but I feel like they probably have updated that since COVID to be like, if games are canceled because of COVID, then you're screwed.
Right.
Can you sue the Bulls organization for being so good that you wanted to get tickets to see them in the first place, and then they got ravaged by COVID and then you couldn't go?
I'm going to sue Zach LaVine personally.
Sue Zach LaVine and name also, you should name Vucevic. He should also be a defendant. Yeah. And Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, honestly, Lonzo is part of the problem because he's new to the team and he really ramped things up. Mm,
at least you would see them in court, you know?
Oh, that's true. I'd finally get to see them.
Your Honor, can you make them play in front of us?
Yeah, can you just like dribble a little?
Yeah, a 3x3 game against three members of the jury.
Well, they would have to do that because that would be part of the evidence, you know, to be like, look at how good they are.
Yeah. I think it would
work.
Who
wouldn't want to pay to see them?
Exactly. But I also lost my voice a little bit in Chicago. COVID-free, got tested, just
too busy partying.
I was quite literally
she
partying.
She was drinking out of an ice luge nightly.
No, I wasn't. Gross.
You just went to Millennium Park and screamed at that giant bean for an hour.
Yeah, screaming, she did flick the bean. The bean. I kept telling her to go flick the bean.
Yeah, Agata was like, you have to flick it. I was like, fine.
What? I mean, you got to. You're going to Chicago.
It's true. Sure. It's true. But I did go to, do they maybe they do this in Philly too, but Chicago has a little German Christmas market called Christkindlmarkt. Uh-huh. And it's just like a little, you know, fair kind of thing in Daily Plaza with little booths that look like little German houses. And I did go there and drank a bunch of mulled wine, ate latkes, ate some raclette cheese sandwiches. It was amazing. But I got really drunk on mulled wine.
I like mulled wine. That sounds so, you know, like you warm up.
Oh, it was amazing. It was so warming and it was perfect.
What's in mulled wine?
Spices?
Is it just like heated up?
It's like heated wine with spices in it.
Yeah. Mm. Like the wine equivalent of cider. Of apple cider, like hot apple cider,
Exactly.
Like, I see. I love a good cider.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of that, Hal?
There is a little holiday market on Independence Hall in Philly, and I'm sure there are other ones like it. I don't think it's specifically like a German one, although we're right near Pennsylvania Dutch country.
Right.
There's got to be one there, but definitely there's a place where you can go get a bunch of food and drink and get drunk, which I'm sure many Philadelphians are ready to do, pandemic or no.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, is this an opportunity to go drink? I'm going to go do that. And then they just run down, get hammered.
Oh my God. Did you watch Mayor of Easttown?
Yes, I did.
What did you think about the accents and just the representation in general?
there were a lot of, first of all, everybody's performance was great. The accents were, I thought Kate Winslet got better as it went on. Because I think the tendency at the beginning is to overdo the O, which really just part of, it's just part of the way you speak. You're not calling it out particularly.
Yeah.
I thought Evan Peters had the best Delco accent of anybody. And it was when he was like,
really?
I guess they stole his bike. Like the way he said it was, oh, that's exactly how that's supposed to sound. And he rattled it off like he'd been speaking like that his whole life.
I mean, but she's British, though. You got to give her a little extra credit.
She was great. She was great. She really got there. It just felt like the first time she was like, hey, like really calling it out.
Yeah.
I'm doing it. But she nailed it. And she also in interviews said that Wawa was like a magical place. So
oh, cute.
I've never been to Wawa.
Neither have I.
Oh, when you get the opportunity.
Should we go right now?
You'll understand.
Yeah.
Go on a trip.
We'll drive across country to Philly. Mm-hmm.
Well, is that the closest Wawa?
They're all East Coast.
Oh. Yeah, they're up and down the East Coast. There are a bunch in Florida now. The Carolinas have started to get them. Anywhere in the tri-state area has them, like New York. Well, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Delaware in particular. I think Maryland might have them.
So nothing close to us.
Nothing close. No, you will have to. It's a pilgrimage, but well worth it.
Gabe is putting in.
Oh, I'm looking at it. Oh,
putting
that
in our zip code right now to find the closest.
Look at that mac and cheese. Look at the sandwich.
That sandwich looks good.
I know. Oh, when they did it on Doughboys, did sound great.
Yeah, it really is. It's, you can't oversell how good it is.
Wow. They've got holiday drinks, hot drinks.
They've really expanded. I mean, you know, they were sort of just a 7-Eleven competitor when I was growing up, but now they've become these sort of convenience marts, and their sandwich bars, I feel like it really sort of kicked in like the early to mid 90s, have just become sort of the centerpiece is getting a fresh made sandwich.
Have you been to Bucky's?
I've only seen pictures of Bucky's, but really want to go.
Bucky's is amazing.
That's a Texas thing, yeah?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they expanded beyond Texas, but it's definitely in Texas, and they're just like, it's like a huge gas station with all kinds of snacks, everything you could ever want. They make their own like little snacks, like Bucky's beaver nuggets.
I've heard of that.
The like, mascot's like a little beaver guy. It's great. I'm a big fan. And yeah, I think they've got like, I think they do sandwiches too, but I can't remember now. Because it's like a whole utopia in there.
Amazing.
Yeah. Bucky's holds a place of honor in the Welcome to Night Vale crew, cast and crew, because when they go on the road, that has been a favorite stop.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah, it is revered.
Yeah, it's a great place to stop if you're driving through Texas. The kolaches. So I used to live in Dallas, and we would drive to Austin all the time. And there's like a little town like halfway through that you stop at and get kolaches, and they're iconic.
What are kolaches?
So they're like little pastries, and they're either savory or sweet. They have all different kinds. You can get them with like cheese, you keep scrolling past the ones I'm trying to get you to click on. At the very top, there you go. So the ones that are like those ones. Yeah.
Almost like a Danish.
Yeah. But like,
but they can be savory.
So you can get them with like cheese and pepperoni sausage. Mm. You can get them with cream cheese and like different kinds of jams, fruits. They're so good.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, I love that. Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
It's like a little Czech town.
Nice. Huh.
And you can just fill up a box with all the ones that look good to you and then take them on the road and go to Austin. It's great. Big fan. That, if you're driving through Texas, gotta stop.
You know, George Harrison has a song called Wawa. I wonder if it's about the convenience store.
Probably.
Yeah, he's probably a big fan, right?
I'm sure he was a huge fan. The two things he invested in were films and Wawa. A lot of people know that.
I think he loved the bangers and mash that they served.
Oh, yeah. The British fair.
They would make it just for him with bangers and mash, shepherd's pie, Yorkshire pudding, huge in Wawa.
What's the sausage? The British?
Oh, like, the blood sausage?
Yes, there we go. Blood sausage.
Oh, it looks yum. Like it came from the negative zone. Yeah. I can't.
All of
Gabe,
the
do your thing.
What?
Do your Beatles thing.
What's my Beatles thing?
Oh, okay. Well, now it's ruined.
I will add that I do love the mushy peas at Wawa.
Oh, they're so good.
I love the mushy peas at Wawa.
the most appetizing sounding name for a food item.
Yeah. Have you watched, has anyone else watched Get Back?
No.
The Beatles documentary?
Yes.
How'd you like it, Hal?
I loved it. The Beatles are my favorite band. So it was like watching them write music.
Yeah.
Like write iconic songs, or John Lennon come up with lyrics that I've been listening to my whole life.
Yeah.
And like, he's just like, and then we'll say this over here. And then he's like, having somebody write it down. And George leaving the group, but like at the most like, no, I'm not going to be here anymore. So just figure out where all my money's going to go. And they can figure it out over at Apple. And then he just walks out. Like, so weird.
So weird.
Oh, I love it.
It was so good. I was like laughing and crying. And like Gabe brought up, like, you just see Paul, like, noodle around for a minute, and he comes up with Get Back. It's like, this is so cool. And also, it was just, like, there was so many just, like, loving, sweet moments. Like, they had written Two of Us, and then they had written another song. I can't remember. And Paul goes, oh, this is this is about us, huh? To John. And John's like, yeah, it's about us going our separate ways and coming back together. And I was like, oh my God, they're so sweet. Cause like they've known each other since they were little kids, you know?
Yeah.
It was great.
So good.
Gabe, favorite moment?
I just loved all the accents so much. It was like every couple of seconds you would hear someone be like,
yeah, baby.
Yeah, exactly. It was fun when they were on the roof and they were interviewing people on the street and it'd be an old lady and she's like, it woke me up from me nap.
Yeah, it was like every Monty Python character should like, well, I think this is very improper indeed. I'm trying to go to work on schedule. I want to come over there and they play, right? Like, it's just every different version.
Yeah, and little like hipster ladies being, yeah, I think it's right good.
Yeah. You're
like, oh, okay. They're all like mild-mannered.
Yeah. I gotta watch this thing.
You gotta watch it. It's kind of an endurance test because it is 3 episodes, 2 hours a piece.
Oh my God.
And a lot of it really is just them noodling around on a guitar.
Okay. Yeah. But maybe when I've got some.
Maybe I'll make a super cut of the best moments.
Thank you. Yeah. But I was thinking we should put out a documentary of us noodling around the ideas of each episode.
Yeah.
Do you think the fans would want that?
Yeah. Dunktown, get back.
Yeah. Get buckets. Get
buckets. Like, you guys can really see how the sausage is made, you know?
Yeah.
We literally have a team meeting called the Sausage Roll.
Oh, yeah, because we used to go, we used to do it at the Cat and Fiddle, which,
oh,
speaking of, you know, yeah. Casualty. Wait, no, it's still around.
Is it?
What,
yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
I thought it closed years ago.
They reopened in a new location after it closed.
They moved.
But they've got, you know, like Shepherd's Pie, which I think their Shepherd's Pie is pretty good, actually, and all kinds of other British fare.
Mushy peas,
you know, all the hits that we listed.
Honestly, their brunch was my favorite.
Yeah, they had a good brunch, and we would meet there and kind of, you know, hash out everything.
And the reason why we called it the sausage roll is because Gabe would always go, "Should I get the sausage roll?" He was always like not sure about getting it, and then he wouldn't get it, and then he finally got it, and it was not.
He was like, "It's fine. It's not great.
Too much buildup."
Yeah, but then from then on, it was always like, "We need a sausage roll meeting."
Yeah,
like, let's get one on the
I think
books.
It's time for a sausage roll. So it would be how the sausage.
And sometimes
is made.
You know it got. Sometimes it got tense. Sometimes we were screaming, crying, kissing.
Gabe,
you know?
Bottled me over the head one time.
Sure. Look, I'm, you know, I'm a fellow podcaster. I know how contentious it gets in those meetings.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you and Mark have really gotten into it.
we got into a fight so bad that we put each other in the hospital, but we had adjoining beds, so that's how we got back together.
Oh, were you holding hands?
Yeah, well, we were trying to swing at each other, and then we could only hold hands, and then that touch just made us realize.
And your heart monitor started beeping at the same time.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you guys start noodling around on your guitars.
You come up with Get Back.
Yeah.
Our producer Ken showed up and tried to pull the plugs simultaneously, was foiled.
That was one fun thing about the documentary is Mal, who is their, like, road manager, roadie assistant kind of guy. Yeah. It would just be like, Mal, bring me a tea. You know, just like yelling at him to like bring stuff.
Can I have a rack of the thinnest pieces of toast on earth every single day?
Beans on toast, in it?
They seriously just ate toast like most days.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And drank tea or beer or whatever.
Yeah.
Wine. I feel like Paul was drinking wine a lot.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
So we asked you last time you were on who you would kiss, and you said Matisse and or Embiid. Do you still agree with this answer?
Yes, I do. I do still agree. I would also give a big kiss to Tyrese Maxey because you can't not love him.
He's
the most lovable. He's just pure joy, and he's good at basketball, which makes it easier to like him.
Yeah, he's on my fantasy team. And it's been a pleasure having him.
Yeah, he's been great. He's been great this year.
Look at this pic, the third one.
With his hair flying up.
Yes.
Oh my God. Look at that big smile too.
The energy. I mean, there are a lot of players in the league where you realize they appreciate the fact that they're one of the few people on earth that get to play professional basketball at the highest possible level.
Yeah, I do love when the players are like appreciative of their opportunity.
Yeah.
And seem to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And this has been such a weird year. I mean, it's been weird ever since the postseason.
Oh, yeah. How are you feeling about this season?
I was an ardent Ben Simmons supporter for the first several years he was on the team. And when I saw him pass up that wide open dunk, I mean, and that's the culmination of four straight games of him completely disappearing in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I said, I can't defend him anymore because he plays the game from a place of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, he needs a sports psychologist.
Yeah.
And I hope he does great. I think he's a decent human being. I think he's an extremely talented player. And I don't think that Philadelphia is the place where he's going to reach his potential. And it's already ugly and going to get uglier.
Mm-hmm.
But Tyrese Maxey's been a bright spot. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if he's going to move before, if Simmons is going to be moved before, was it February 22nd, whatever the trade deadline is. It all sucks, but I don't think that the Sixers are playing it wrong.
Because they're kind of holding out. In all of the trade talk that was happening, it seemed like they were holding out for better deals and, you know, whatnot.
Yeah.
And maybe even now just trying to work with him. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, the team was saying their preference was to have him back on the team. And he said, I'm not coming back. He had teammates who were going to fly out to see him that he said, don't come. Basically for the idea of, you're going to be wasting your time coming out here because I'm not changing my mind. Then they started to fine him. They took his first, whatever, $8 million of his pay this year, put it in an escrow account and used that to pay off fines for him missing practices. So he showed up for a practice, then got sent home the next day.
I remember he had the phone in the pocket practice.
Exactly. Yeah. The phone. That's controversial. It could have just been his practice jersey. Yeah. That's what they're saying that it might have been. But also, would we be surprised if it was his phone? We wouldn't be.
No.
So, I mean, I don't know. I'm glad he is getting help. I don't think he has to disclose his therapy with the team. But I do think it's fair for them to say, this is related to your work here. What's your status update? How are you feeling in general? What's going on? And there seems to have been, you know, they're playing this game of chess against one another. And I don't think Rich Paul's doing a particularly great job.
No, I don't.
He's distracted. He's got Adele.
Yeah. You know,
to worry about.
I don't blame him then. She's lovely.
I think he's maybe doing Ben Simmons a disservice only because his value as a player has gone down. Mm-hmm. People were so excited to take him in the offseason. And now I think teams are like, well, we don't even know what condition he's in. We don't know where his attitude is.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly think he needs, like we were talking about with Tyrese Maxey, he needs to find like the joy in the game again. Because like you're saying, he was playing from a place of fear and maybe even frustration. And it's like he needs to find the love of the game again.
There was so much pressure on him.
Yeah.
Yes. He's got a lot of pressure. I think he's been told how great he is his whole life. And he is great. I also wonder if that has slowed his development because he feels like, well, what about all the stuff I can do?
Right.
And the greatest players of all time, the really like top five people are people who never stop improving their game and are always looking for ways to get better. And nothing is ever good enough. If it's one championship, it has to be two. If it's one MVP, it has to be three. It's that kind of drive. He's never really exhibited that.
Yeah,
and he has enough talent to get past it, but I think the Spurs would be the best possible place for him to go because Greg Popovich, I think if anybody could coach him and make him a better player, it's Greg Popovich. That's what he's done. his entire career. Like any reclamation project that comes his way, all of a sudden turns into the best version of themselves.
I mean, I think DeMar DeRozan is a really good example of that. He suffered from depression when he got traded from the Raptors, went to the Spurs. Pop took him in, and now he's having a great season. I mean, he was having a great season his last season with the Spurs, too. I think you're right. That's probably a good place for him. But the deal makers have to agree on
it. No one asked us, unfortunately.
Yeah.
What we think.
Come on.
We should be able to weigh in, though. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Oh. Simo the Savage.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. He can spend a lot of time on Call of Duty now.
This is Call of Duty room, I'm sure.
Should I get a giant neon sign that says the God of the Savage? Gabe,
it's not
supportive.
It's got to be an A word.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
A God of the Average.
What? So rude.
A God of above average.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There we go.
A God of the Avenger.
Oh, look at you.
Okay. I've never seen those, but...
A God of the Ass Man.
Okay, I like that.
There you go. Even better. With the crown, but the crown is a butt.
Yeah. Okay, now we're talking.
All right. We got to get into it. We asked you on as a Philly fan to talk about a documentary about Allen Iverson. And this is a series we've been doing all month. Every week for 30 days, we're covering a different episode of ESPN's 30 for 30. It's 30 for 30 for 30.
30 for 30 for 30.
I love it.
For turkey.
We got to do this another month in the future just to use that drop again.
Yeah, we should.
That's from Get Back, right? That's one of the accents of the people on the street.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Turkey for turkey for turkey.
That's an Irishman yelling up at the roof.
Yeah.
So we asked you to come on to talk about No Crossover, the trial of Allen Iverson from 2010. It's directed by Steve James, who directed Hoop Dreams, which I love. And I actually have the DVD behind me on this shelf. But to be honest, when we asked you, I did not know anything about this.
Really?
Documentary, oh, really?
About the documentary.
Mm. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And I had heard about the trial, and I'd heard about his, you know, how he almost didn't make it out of high school basketball. But I didn't realize how messed up this situation was.
Mm, yeah.
And, you know, our last week's episode was very sad. There's another sad one.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. It was definitely a bummer for sure.
Yeah. But I want to ask you first, Hal, what is your, you know, relationship with Allen Iverson?
So my freshman year of college, I went to Syracuse, and I had season tickets for football and basketball because I think every freshman student wound up getting them. And Syracuse men's basketball team was really good that year. And when Georgetown came to play, the best player on the court was Allen Iverson. Mm-hmm. And I'd never heard of him before. I didn't know anything about him. And he was so clearly the best player on the court. You knew he was going to be a professional basketball player. He just couldn't be stopped. Then he was drafted by the Sixers, and he's one of the athletes in the history of the city that there was an instant connection. He's a very, what we would call a from here guy, where he embodies Philadelphia, that working class. Like, I may not be the biggest, I may not be, I'm going to outwork everybody. You can't keep me down. I have my heart on my sleeve all the time. The crowd responded to that.
Yeah.
So he was and continues to be idolized. When he was traded, he got cheered when he came back. And when this documentary was made, I was looking at it, I was like, oh, it came out in 2010. That was kind of a low point for him. And he has since come back. You know, he's sort of a respected elder in Philadelphia sports, and he's constantly at Sixers games, so he's still involved with the team.
Nice.
He was always a controversial figure just around the league because of who he was, and he changed the culture. He's an important cultural piece, not only in how the game was played, but in how you could express yourself
Off
the court. Mm-hmm. And this trial in that documentary followed him around his entire time in Philly. Anytime he got in trouble, you could always point back to this thing that was hung over his head.
Right.
When he was 17 years old.
Yeah. So essentially the, you know, giving the synopsis of the whole documentary for anyone who doesn't know, when Allen Iverson was in high school in Hampton, Virginia, he was a star player, took his both his football and basketball team to state championships, and was in a bowling alley one night. A big fight broke out. There's like some grainy footage of it, but really not much to look at. And no real like eyewitnesses other than the people who were like in the fight. And you know, it's essentially a fight between some white kids and some black kids. And weeks later, four of the black kids involved are arrested, none of the white kids. And this documentary is about that trial and, you know, how it sort of tore this town of Hampton, Virginia apart along racial lines. But I kind of want to argue with the filmmaker that the town already seemed torn apart along right. racial lines. Yeah. I think just this exposed a problem that was already there and that was sort of simmering beneath the surface for quite a while.
So the guy who made the documentary, he's from the same town?
Yeah.
Okay.
He grew up in Hampton, Virginia. His dad was this guy, Billy James, who seemed to be like a, you know, pillar of the community.
Mm-hmm.
A business owner who supported teen and high school sports and was like a huge fan of Allen Iverson, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. So the fight got like very intense. Like there were chairs being thrown and stuff. And yeah, there's like footage of like the lead detective from the case talking about how obviously there's racial undertones to like every single thing that everyone is saying. Mm-hmm. But his whole deal was that like the actual physical damage done to the white kids was like more than whatever happened to the black kids. So that's why he went after the black kids, which is just like, obviously the whole justice system is set up to not protect specifically black male teenagers.
Right.
So like they were really just kind of set up in a way that it was easy to scapegoat them. And then also Allen Iverson was already a name that people knew. So because he was identified as one of the people there, even though he was claiming that he wasn't there, and then he admitted that he was there.
Yeah. He said, like in trial that he was there but left, like saw a friend like ushered him out.
Yeah, like he wasn't part of the physical part of what happened. Yeah, so basically it blew up out of proportion because he was spotted there and then people like had an easy place to or easy person to scapegoat.
Yeah. And the other guys who were arrested were also on his basketball team.
Right.
So It's like it's a group of basketball stars who are well known in this town. They're the, you know, ones who got arrested.
Yeah. And the claim was that the white kids were saying the N-word. And then that's why like things kind of were escalating into what happened. Physical brawl.
Yeah.
But yeah, the footage is very hard to see what's going on.
I wrote down that the detective said he was only charging the people who threw chairs at innocent people. And yeah. No one in there was, quote unquote, innocent. If you see the footage, it's just like a bunch of people fighting. So right. I don't really understand how he decided who was innocent and who wasn't. But anyways.
You know, it's fascinating. I mean, a few things from watching it. One is like nobody seems to know or can come to an agreement, including people who were there 100% on what happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How it started, who did what, all of that.
Yeah.
And the other is clearly, like you were saying, if you drive through a town and there are a bunch of rebel flags up, that's a powder keg.
Yeah.
That is a absolute powder keg, and there are a lot of problems, and something's going to cause that to erupt. But also, the range of conspiracy theories around, like, it's the elders of the community are trying to do this. I don't know how much of that I buy into as much as just there is a societal issue and a framework that's set up that creates disadvantages for people and then gives everybody who's in a position of advantage some reason to be suspicious that the people who are worse off are up to no good.
Right.
So we have a reason to go, well, obviously, you see what part of town they're in. That's a bad part of town.
Right.
Well, why is it a bad – nobody –
Right.
You know, and this is something we're maybe starting to address a little bit, but nobody there is talking about, like, why is it like this here?
Right.
Why is it like this anywhere? And how can we make the community better? It's you get driven to action because something shitty like this brawl happens and this 17-year-old kid gets tried as an adult.
Yeah.
When nobody was killed. Nobody, like, there's just no, it's, you know, watch, what is it, the 13th or the 14th,
that documentary.
This is the way it's been set up for a very long time. And the seeds were planted for that way before. So this is, you just look at it and go, well, yeah, of course all this is going on. And in 2010, we're not even talking about it because we weren't talking about it.
Yeah. And it does feel like, I was kind of surprised that it was from 2010 because it feels like it's older, but I mean, that was, you know, obviously these are not problems that are solved in any way today, but like at least there's a lot more conversation around it. I mean, I was kind of struck by how like the filmmaker was like listing everyone who wouldn't even talk to him.
Oh yeah, that was crazy, where there were not even just the people involved, but the filmmaker's mom was like, I told the guy at the grocery store what you were making a documentary about, and he was like, don't even talk to me about that, Allen Iverson. Like, in 2010, people were still pissed about this incident. And then the people involved, a lot of them didn't want to talk to him either because it was such a controversial issue that, like, I think a lot of people just wanted to put behind them.
Right. And like, there's no winning.
There's
like,
no
you,
winning.
You rehash it and then, because from what it sounded like, it felt like, you know, people felt like they had to take sides, and it became a really like black versus white kind of like, you're either, if you're white, you're, you know, trying to get him to go to prison. And if you're black, you're defending him, which like, and I think a lot of those people, you know, were never going to change their minds, you know, the same way that like racism exists everywhere to this day, especially the older generations. And I think like, and then for Allen Iverson and all the kids involved, like that's traumatic because that alters the course of your entire life, you know, like having the blame put on them, going through a racist court system with a racist judge, and then having, you know, all the eyes of all the people in his town, but also like, this was much bigger than that. Like,
it was in Sports Illustrated. Yeah, Tom Brokaw interviewed him.
Right. Like it turns into this like this major thing that, you know, impacts the rest of their lives. And for Allen Iverson, like luckily he had another chance to kind of come back and go to the NBA. Yeah. And like, but even still, like watching him, the footage of him, like when he was watching that kid who was talking about how his scholarship, like, he was so thankful for the scholarship. Like, you can tell, like, he's still hurting, and I'm sure to this day still hurting. But like, it sounds like from what you were saying, Hal, that he, you know, since this documentary came out, that like he's done a lot of other great stuff, but it still affects him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at that point in 2010, his career was winding down. He was he wasn't who he been. Does he go to Europe? Is he going to stay here and try to play? He had come back to the Sixers and that hadn't really worked out, but ultimately, he got to a better place. You never want to see somebody. You always want your heroes to go out on top and retire on their terms, and it doesn't always work out like that. But this is something that obviously had a huge effect on his life and all the people in that town. Like, it's super privileged to me to sit here and say, well, it's this institutional problem, and I don't know why they're not addressing it. Well, I mean, if you live there and it affects your community, you're going to feel how you feel about it based on race, based on class, and unless you have some piece of evidence that to you is overwhelming.
Right.
You're only going to be dug further into your position. There's mm-hmm. just no way past it. So there are, and he's still, you know, they even mentioned at the time, like, he's not coming back here and pouring a ton of money into the community. He hasn't given back the way we think that he should.
He hasn't, but it's like, he hasn't said thank you is what she said.
But right. like, why? I mean, I understand that completely, because it, mm-hmm. it, while there were certain community members that really supported him, I bet it still feels like the community was against him. I mean, like, mm-hmm. ultimately yeah. at large. So just to give a little detail about what happened, he and three of his teammates are arrested. One of them, I believe it was Smith, he demands a jury trial, and it's a hung jury first, and then they can't agree on what the actual charge should be. And ultimately, he wins the case, he gets off, and he goes to college. He was a senior. But the other three guys... Well, Iverson got this lawyer from Hampton University that everyone thought, oh, he's a great lawyer, he's going to do a great job. But this guy wasn't a trial lawyer, so he kind of wasn't used to this situation. So he just was fine with a judge trial, not a jury trial. So the other three guys got judge trials. This judge clearly was against them from the beginning, the way he talked to them.
Yeah.
And then... Allen Iverson ends up getting 15 years in prison, and they say that could be reduced to 5 years and 10 months with good behavior. But even if it's 10 months, it would be 15 years of probation. And he's tried in as an adult, even though he's 17. It's a felony charge, so it's permanently, you know, he's a felon for life, which... is huge, because that means he can't vote. There's a lot of other stuff involved with that. And this is all without pretty much any evidence, except for a couple witnesses, one girl saying that he came up to her. She said, why does it have to be racial? Which I'm like, lies. You did not say that in the middle of a brawl. And he came up to her and on purpose hit her in the head with a chair. And that's what he was convicted on, was pretty much nothing. So then he goes to prison. He's in there. I'm not sure how long he was in there, but eventually a group of citizens from his town encouraged the governor, who was the first Black governor in the country, maybe, but in Virginia. He was about to leave office. And they said, since you're about to leave office, could you please pardon these boys? So he, I guess it was a conditional pardon, which means they still had the record or something like that, but they could get out of prison. And then years later, the charge was actually overturned for insufficient evidence.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously an opportunity that a lot of people in his position wouldn't get. And they even mentioned it, like, it most likely would not have become what it was if he wasn't Allen Iverson, but also mm-hmm. like, he wouldn't have had the opportunity to get pardoned by the governor, because a lot of young Black men end up in the same position as him and then have no opportunities to get out. They're just in prison for their whole sentence. But yeah. I did love the woman who helped him when he got out.
Oh my God.
It was the sweetest thing. She was like, she was a white lady who, like,
I wrote down her name,
tutored him to try to get him to graduate, because he hadn't officially graduated from high school.
Well, once he got out of prison, his high school said, we don't want you back. Don't come back here.
Yeah,
and she was so upset about that. Her name is Sue Lambiot. And so she said, come to my office every day and I'll tutor you and we'll get you your high school diploma.
And they did. It was so cute. I love that footage of them.
Yeah.
Talking about her years later, saying, if it hadn't been for her, like, I don't know where I would be, which was really sweet.
Yeah. And then because of that, he could, you know, go on to play
Georgetown,
NBA, everything, you know.
There was a lot of, like a lot of the comments, especially there were these two guys who were, I guess, announcers for the high school games. A lot of their comments and a lot of the comments from the white people interviewed felt like pretty common discourse that's still used today. Like those two announcer dudes said, you know, when he was growing up, he would miss class and he would miss practice. And the coaches were so lenient on him. And like they made him this arrogant, blah, 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 blah. And then it goes to the coach and the coach is like, he had a pretty absent mom. Sometimes he had to stay home and like take care of his younger siblings. Like it's that kind of stuff where you're like, why can't they be understanding of someone's condition instead of immediately being like, he got preferential treatment for this?
Yeah, you could feel some resentment from a lot of those interviews. Yes. Or even the interviewer's mom talking about how she was like, he needs to be punished for what he's done. It's like, and then he was like, well, my dad didn't think that, right? And she was like, yeah, your dad was like a really forgiving person. It's like, your dad seems reasonable. Yeah. And your mom seems like a racist asshole. Sorry.
But it goes back to that, right? Like, this is my opinion and it's going to be hard to back me right. off
yeah.
of it.
Yeah. And she's like 100 years old.
Those announcers, especially the one who was a retired detective.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
You know, they know what their narrative is, and anything they can grab onto that supports it is what they're going to point to rather than the things that,
right.
You know, they don't want to look any deeper as to why. They just want to say, oh, he took all this time off of school. Obviously, he's a baby and blah, 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 blah. My favorite was that one guy who I think was the photographer who looked like he was in shock the whole time he was being interviewed because his eyes were real wide. And yes. I kept waiting for him to like relax, like to come to the end. Like he would be like, and here's the thing. And I took all the pictures and then I was happy when he got out. And then his eyes would stay like that. And I would just be waiting for him to go, anyway, this feels great. I'm going to go take a nap. But he was just in constant like shock.
Yeah, and like all the like journalists too.
Oh my god,
talking about like that one guy.
I think his name is Jim Pearson or something. Like
Shockman.
That. Shockman.
I was just like every time he spoke, I was like, dude, shut the fuck up! What an asshole! And then like at one point, he was like, he said that he was at some meeting and then everyone turned on him and then he was like enemy.
They introduced him, Jim Spencer, that's his name. Okay. They introduced him in the beginning as the correspondent for the local paper who dealt mainly with racial issues. But he's a white guy and he talked about himself as being like a real like advocate for the community and fighting for the community. But then every single thing he said was like the typical shitty discourse.
Racial microaggressions. Yes. Yeah.
And so everything he wrote in the paper, and he was like, I was trying to be very fair and balanced. And it's just like two white guys talking about the issue. And everything he said was like, Iverson should get more time. Mm-hmm. He deserves this. Like, yes, he should have been tried as an adult. He should have gotten worse punishment or what, he got off easy or whatever. And then he goes to this black church where they're having a meeting and he's standing on the sidelines, I guess, reporting on it. He also, I want to point out, mentioned that Iverson was like privileged and that people were being too sensitive. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then he goes to this meeting. The pastor calls him out and says, Jim Spencer's over here and he's going to write the same old shit tomorrow. And like, they all start like clapping at the pastor and like pointing at him and being like, yeah, get this guy out of here. And he said, I was really hurt by that. Yeah. It's like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. He's like, from that point on, like, I was like, you know, the enemy or something like that. It's like, because you are crafting the narrative for how the country is looking at the situation, and you're the fucking victim here.
And they a lot of the black activists were talking about how he was stoking the fire. He was making a lot of times people choose sides, and the newspaper was like so invested in the sensationalism of this trial because it was selling papers. And so they were like, you can't claim to be a part of our community and then like use this against us just to sell papers.
Right. I mean, that's like all news, I think, like, you know, but the part where they were talking about the conspiracy theories, like, that just kind of reminded me of like QAnon and like anti-vaxxers. And I was like, God, this has just always been around. Yeah. But it's even less believable back then because like just the idea that this brawl was orchestrated by anyone for any reason of like, none of them made any sense, right? No. Like it was like the other
high school or like, the university was like, oh, well, we'll make him come to our university if he goes to jail because he'll have no other options or whatever.
Right. And it's all like, you can kind of follow the thread of like how people are getting there. But it's like the most obvious answer is clearly the real thing, which is that these kids were like talking shit and it escalated. And like, that's it. There is no like goal here of like, especially for something that would be like, 8 steps down the road, like they get arrested, he goes to jail, and then he can go to this college instead, or he can play on this team. It's like, no, of course not. Like, nobody knows what the fuck's gonna happen.
Right.
Nobody can predict like how much that's gonna blow up and what's gonna happen to them.
But I thought the filmmaker dealt with that in a good way, where he was like, the reason why people are searching for these conspiracy theories is because this is a situation that really doesn't make logical sense.
Right.
Like, people are calling Allen Iverson a horrible monster who did this heinous crime. And it's like, nope, these are teens fighting. This happens all the time. This is not something that's like an evil crime. It's a pretty common thing for teens to break out into a fight.
Yeah.
I loved when his producer asked him, did you ever wish you were black?
Oh, yeah.
And his immediate thing was like, I loved Bill Russell. I wished I could play like them. And then he's like, do you ever wish you were white? And the producer's like, yeah, sometimes. But that's all, like, that's like, you could go for 20 minutes on
yes.
that.
Yes.
You could have a whole 20-minute thing about what that means and what it means for the town with a guy who's coming back to document it, who was born and raised there.
Yeah.
But in 2010, nobody was having, you know, no white people were having that conversation.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Or very few were.
And I think that's probably why, because the filmmaker was a white guy, I think it's probably why he got so many no's from a lot of people, because they're probably like, we don't know how you're going to portray this and we don't want to be part of it in case you're like, you know, going to be twisting it. And I don't feel like it was super biased in either direction, like for or against him, which I think is good. But I can understand why his old like teammates and stuff would have, you know, hesitation about participating.
Well, one of the activists who were trying to help get Allen Iverson out of jail, her name was Joyce B. Hobson. She was a Hampton High School teacher and just, I think she's done a lot of activism in general. She said she was really reluctant to talk to him and finally broke down and said yes. But he was like, well, why were you reluctant? And she said, because I think African-Americans should tell their stories. Well, I think now is a common thing that is taught in like a journalism school, or like when I went to grad school for documentary film, essentially. And that's taught a lot. That was taught a lot, where it's like, you should really tell your own story. Don't try and tell another person's story who's so far away from you. So I thought he was telling his own story, because a lot of it was about him and growing up in Hampton. But she said it kind of plainly, like, I think we should be telling this story, not you, a privileged white guy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, I would like to see another film. Like another film from like somebody who is black and maybe lived there as well, or, you know, had some kind of connection to it. Like, I think it would be a very different film, even though I feel like he did try to keep it like pretty balanced.
Well, I think the interesting thing about this, honestly, was the white people felt very free to say their thoughts and they're not good thoughts.
Yeah. Well, that's and it does feel like the equivalent of like locker room talk.
Yes.
Like, I'm talking with my this white guy, so I know I can like say these things in a way that it's not like, you know, overtly racist, but the undertones are there the whole time. So then and then you put that in a documentary where you're like describing what happened and you have interviews with black people who are around, like it makes them look so much worse.
Yeah.
Which like, I mean, I don't know if that, I mean, that's just how they made themselves look. So
exactly.
Fuck them. But, but like, yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, ultimately I would say watch this documentary because it was very interesting and I learned a lot of information that I didn't otherwise know, but I do want more. I want,
yeah, it feels like it felt unfinished. Like yeah. They're, and I really was sad that he wasn't in it at all, which I understand that, you know, he probably mm-hmm. doesn't want to be rehashing it. But yeah, I mean, I knew like kind of the basics of what happened, but I had previously like Googled it to try to understand more. And it was hard, like I was reading articles and it was kind of hard to like parse, you know, what had happened in this brawl. And like, I mean, I still obviously none of us really know the details of like mm-hmm. how it started and what happened, but I felt like I feel like I kind of get it more and like all the situations around it. And like, and then I actually, so he was still in the league when this came out, but he was like not playing. Is that correct?
He went to the Grizzlies. Didn't want to play there. And so he just wasn't playing for them. Got traded back to the Sixers. Is that right, Hal?
Yeah, that's what they said.
Yeah.
But then
yeah, he came back.
But then essentially retired.
Right. But like, yeah.
So
yeah.
he had retired probably right before this came out.
Right. But so then 2011, that All-Star game, I bought tickets to go. It was happening in Dallas. And there was rumors going around that he was going to play, which was a big reason why I bought tickets, because my ex was a huge Allen Iverson fan. My ex was the person who like got me into watching basketball, specifically Mavericks, but he loved Allen Iverson. So I was like, the All-Star game is going to be in Dallas and Allen Iverson might be there. He didn't end up showing. I think he was done, but like it was still in that zone of like, he might show up. I don't know. Maybe.
I wonder if in that 2010-2011 season, if a bunch of people still voted for him.
Yeah, he got a bunch of votes. That was it. Like he had a ton of votes. And there was like a big question mark of like,
will he play?
Will he? Won't he? And he did not. But it was still fun.
Yeah,
we went to Cowboy Stadium. That's where they had the All-Star game.
Were you so high up?
Yes.
You were sitting on top of that giant screen out of the center of the field.
Yeah, exactly. It was good, though.
Iverson's such an interesting guy because he achieved so much in his career. And I think the number one thing people think of when they think of him is his practice
speech.
Oh, my God, yes.
Like, that's the number one thing. You don't immediately go to he put his body on the line every single night. I feel like he gets associated with more negative things than positive things right off the bat. You either go, he was too selfish, couldn't win because he had to take all the shots, or he refused to practice. He was a problem. Like it's, I can't imagine what his life has been like. And this has been following him around since he was 17 years old, really. And probably before that, you know, they don't really talk about the undercurrent of what it meant.
Right.
To be a popular black athlete in Hampton, Virginia in the early 90s. So that has followed him around. I think he's a misunderstood person because it's so easy to just pick the thing you either like or dislike the most about him and make that who he is.
Well, and that like thug label on him was placed on him from the get-go. I mean, yeah, I don't think he was able to shake that. And he did go to prison again, you know, later on. And I think, you know, that's something that the league at the time, like, didn't they create a dress code because of him?
Mm-hmm.
Or like he was part of the reason why the league created the dress code?
Yeah.
it's like these things, I think, just, yeah, followed him around for the rest of his life. And now he's in a TikTok commercial.
The ultimate redemption story. He's in the commercial. It's a, is it the one with the guy who like simplifies things and then does the hands out?
This guy. Like, no, our listeners can't see this, but just we'll put a link in the show notes to the commercial. He's with Ty Lue.
I haven't seen it.
It's great. I love seeing him whenever he's out and about doing things. And I hope it would be great to see a whole Allen Iverson documentary about his whole life till now, you know?
Yeah. Like, let's get a, like a Michael Jordan style.
Yeah.
Documentary series going. I would love to see that.
Where's his last dance?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he's, you know, no matter what he goes through, he'll never have to buy a meal in the city of Philadelphia because he remains beloved there, even though he never won it. He was the last one to take the Sixers to the finals, and he really does embody the city in a way that nobody has until Embiid came along. Embiid's a very similar, like, some people just get the city and they connect with them on a mm-hmm. special level, and he is Iverson is one of those guys, maybe the most from here guy from the city where Wilt Chamberlain was born and played.
Oh,
that's awesome. All right, let's move on to our mail basket.
You got mail.
Today we have a package. Ooh.
So we got a package from two cuties who are married to each other. Beef Watson and Pickle in Space, in our Discord.
Those are their legal names.
We call them Beef and Pickle. Yeah. And they probably call each other that.
Yeah.
I assume.
Yeah.
But they sent us some really amazing snacks from Snack Hawaii. Hawaiian Hurricane Microwave Popcorn. Mm. Li Hing Mui Mango, like dried mango, but it has this like powder on it called Li Hing Mui.
Oh, yum.
Li Hing Mui Gummies. Hold on. I'm going to grab them. I forgot to pick.
Bring them over. Yeah, why are you hoarding all this stuff? I want to eat some.
She sent some to me too.
Gabe's got some.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
I sent some to Gabe because I didn't want to keep it all for myself.
Ooh, mochi crunch and nori popcorn.
So if you haven't had Hawaiian Hurricane popcorn, it's so good. Essentially what it is it has like nori or like a type, it has like some furikake
like spice seasoning
on it. And then it has little tiny crunchy crackers in it.
Ooh, sour watermelon and strawberry belts. These all look delicious.
Oh.
So thank you, Beef and Pickle, for sending that to us. We love it. Gabe, have you tried it? Any of it?
I haven't. So these gummy bears, they've got something on them. What's the story? I'm a little scared of them.
Are you saying you're going to try one now on the air?
Yeah, can you try one on...
I'm opening the belt.
Really? Okay, I will.
Because, yeah, they have a powder on them, and I can't even express what it is, because it's not sour. It's like...
It says it's preserved plum.
That's what it is, yeah.
Don't wipe any off. Just go...
Don't rinse it with your water.
We're trying the strawberry belts.
Don't dunk it.
I wish I could give you somehow.
It's so good.
I wish I could eat them.
Oh my God, it's so good.
What do you think,
I'm gonna eat this paper towel I have on my desk. Oh, it's so good. I've got a dry mouth now.
You have a Li Hing Mui paper towel?
You tried the gummy bear, Gabe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I only tasted gummy bear. I did. Maybe I got to suck on one first. But yeah, it was good. I love a gummy bear.
They all have the same thing on it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Did you chew it or did you swallow it? I didn't even see you.
I chewed it.
Maybe four of them at once?
I can't differentiate what the powder is either, because it just tastes like gummy to me.
It's like kind of sour, but it's like an umami-ish. I don't even know how to describe it. I don't have a... educated palate. Also,
a little salty, maybe.
Yeah,
I like it.
It's really good.
I left the dried mango at Molly's house,
so she gave it to me.
Okay, good. And Anyways, thank you, Beef and Pickle.
Yummy.
This snacks.
This is awesome.
Yes, thank you so much.
And we'll have to have a popcorn party.
Ooh.
Popcorn party.
Have you ever been to Hawaii, Hal?
I have.
What was the best thing you ate there?
What was the best thing that I ate in Hawaii? Oh, that's a really good question. I love a luau. I'm such a tourist.
Yeah.
And I will pile a plate with kalua pork and rice and just eat that.
Yum.
And that is how I will pass away. And I'll be so happy. It wasn't the hug that did me in. It was the kalua pork and rice.
That sounds amazing.
I foundered.
That sounds amazing. I want to go to a luau. If you want to send us something, you can email us at hi@dunk.town, or you can leave a message on our cutie hotline, 903-420-DUNK. Or you can send us snacks to our mailbox address, which is 1920 Hillhurst Avenue, number 105, Los Angeles, California, 90027. And please don't poison them before you send them.
Yeah, I just ate some.
Yeah. I think last time, it was funny, the last time you were here, Hal, everyone should go back and listen to that episode because it is insanely funny. But we were joking a lot about COVID.
Oh, so funny.
We're like, this will be over in a week. LOL.
And one of our jokes was like, don't send us COVID in the mail. We were so stupid back then.
Well, now you can try to send it, you know.
It won't work, but you could try.
Yeah.
It's a COVID mail off sponsored by Dunktown. Put your COVID in a box and shove it into the post and see
gummy bears. There.
Yeah.
Hal, thank you so much for being here. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Oh, you can just follow me online at Hal Lublin anywhere on social. I've got stuff coming up in the new year that hopefully I'll be able to promote soon. And then all my podcasts. I sure hope you give them a listen. They're fun.
Thanks for coming back.
It was our pleasure.
We needed a Philly expert for this episode. Yeah. You know, it was the perfect fit.
I'm here for you.
All right. Well, thank you again. And thanks to all of our cutie listeners for coming on this journey with us. As always, we love you.
Love you.
Bye. For more Dunktown content, check out our Patreon. It's patreon.com/Dunktown. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Dunktown Podcast. I am on Twitter at @echo_mint and on Instagram at @agatamonica. Anastasia is on both at @AnastasiaVigo. Check out our website, dunk.town. If you like the show, please write us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you listen. We always really appreciate those. We have t-shirts, stickers, hoodies, and more available for sale at dunk.town/store. Thank you to Andrea Tomingus for the Dunktown design, and thank you to Andrew Bear for our original music for the show. Sources and references from this episode can be found in the episode description.